basis. This is one major reason why the citizens of these countries Israel has normalized ties with are against the diplomatic relations. Former U.S. President Donald Trump began this process under what was called the Abraham Accord. Aside from naming Al-Quds as Israel's capital, it pushed these Arab nations to normalize ties with Bahrain. In one sense, this move is criticized for giving legitimacy to Israeli violations against Palestinians. Bahrainis have rejected this step, with the main opposition group Al-Wafaq and the top cleric denouncing the kingdom's normalization of ties with Israel. Al-Wafaq went on to say that the regime doesn't have the right to do so.
It's true that probably a large majority of Bahrainis are against this so-called normalization with Israel. But there are powerful influences on Bahrain. Britain, the United States, Saudi Arabia, and they all are essentially forcing the issue without objection from the monarchy in Bahrain. So I think they are the ones who are calling the shots here, not the people of Bahrain.
It was not mandated by its people to establish relations with the Zionist entity. Thus, any communication or relations with the occupying regime is rejected and condemned. Our people will not accept it and deal with it as a threat to their stability and existence. Israel has been more than happy to have relationships established with the Arab countries, since the closer it gets with the Arab nations and normalized ties, the less afraid it is of its existence being in danger and thus acquire more legitimacy. At the same time, this gives Israel an opportunity to monitor the actions of these Arab nations in case there are any moves taken against Israel. In the case of the UAE, Israel has not only expanded its trade relations, but it has also set up surveillance operations with it, one of the reasons to monitor the actions of Iran. Israel and the UAE have even taken a step further and set up a surveillance center in the Yemeni island of Socotra. The same may also happen with Bahrain, especially given its close proximity to Iran. In the meantime, the anger of the Arab residents of these countries that have normalized ties with Israel is boiling over.
Israel is an expansionist country. It has been from the beginning of its existence. It wants to expand. It's basically an imperialist nation, even though it's small in size. But it has imperialist ambitions.
Decades of Arab consensus that there will be no ties with Israel while the Palestinian question remains unresolved is being trampled on. U.S.'s push on the so-called deal of the century was a complete failure, which has joined the dustbin of history. Maybe that is why these so-called normalizations are taking place.
It's another means of pressure. It's, going through other Arab countries who have the monarchies, the Gulf monarchies, basically have realigned their alliances with the and they're doing the bidding of Israel and the United States and the Western countries. So they've decided to essentially abandon the Palestinians.
Germany held a general election on Sunday, a vote that's expected to make history in the European Union's most influential country. The results showed that the ruling Union parties have fallen behind the rival Social Democrats by about 2 percentage points, losing the election after 16 years in power. The Social Democratic Party, however, can't form a government as it hasn't garnered enough seats at the lower house of the federal parliament. That means they have to team up with at least one other party to form a coalition. The conservative Christian Democrats said they still intend to form a coalition government.
The people who voted for CDU or CSU want us to take responsibility and govern, and we are convinced that a government under the leadership of the Union is the best thing for Germany, and we have a responsibility to these voters.
Olaf Scholz, leader of the Social Democratic Party, however, said the voters have made it clear that they don't want German Chancellor Angela Merkel's sister parties in power. His party is looking at a coalition with two parties that have also made gains in the elections, the Greens and the Free Democrats.
Well, Germany and its elections are important because Germany, with a population of some 80 million people, has roughly the largest population in Europe, with the exception of Russia. And, of course, it has the strongest economy in the traditional concepts of Europe, you know, excluding Russia. The rest of the European community follows pretty much along behind Germany and German politics and German views on how things should be done on the continent.
In the meantime, talks for forming a government may take weeks. Olaf Scholz, however, has vowed to form the cabinet before Christmas. Angela Merkel steered Germany through multiple crises in the past 16 years, establishing herself as the world's most powerful woman. She was raised in East Germany and pursued her education to receive her doctorate in quantum chemistry, two factors in her life that observers believe have had a great impact on her political views.
She grew up in Eastern Germany, the German Democratic Republic, the old communist state, and although born in Hamburg, she went east as an infant and absorbed the viewpoint of the German Democratic Republic and state-controlled situations.
Throughout her political career, she was known for helping women take key positions in male-dominated German politics. As an example, she threw her weight behind Ursula von der Leyen, the first female German defense minister and the European Commission president. Under Merkel, Germany played a crucial role in saving the euro during the 2008 financial crisis. She also opened the German borders to refugees during the 2015 migrant crisis, letting in almost 1 million people to the country. The German chancellor had a rocky relationship with former US President Donald Trump. The two clashed over several issues, including the 2015 Iran nuclear deal, funding the NATO, and Trump's so-called Muslim ban on immigrants. Merkel's critics, however, have called her out on her immigration policy, her inaction toward the climate crisis, and her government's COVID-19 restrictions.
And instead of stopping the wars, Merkel simply intensified them by accepting the educated people from those countries, the skilled people from those countries, which deprived the Southwest Asia and North Africa of its most needed middle class, and dumped a load of people into Europe that had no real connection to the continent and had no linguistic or religious or any kind of cultural ties. And the destruction of the European community continues apace as a result of her actions.
Merkel will remain the country's interim chancellor until a new coalition is formed and the parliament votes for a new leader. Her departure marks the end of an era for the European country.
Retired Army Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson is the former Chief of Staff to U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell, who emerged as a leading critic of the neoconservatives. Neoconservatives are characterized by their support of hawkish foreign policies. In remarks to Mass Peace Action last June, he made some brazen assertions about Israel.
I said the other day Israel would not be a state in 20 years. It'd be gone. It certainly will not be a democracy. It'll be an apartheid state, and the world will just reject it, as they did South Africa. But I'm now saying it probably won't be a state. It'll be gone.
He pointed to the 1946 Joint Chiefs of Staff to a State War Navy Coordinating Committee, noting that then U.S. President Harry Truman was trying at the time to decide whether to recognize Israel in 1947-48 and what to do about U.S. policy. Wilkerson said, Israel is a strategic liability of the first order for the United States, and the chances are very high it would drag Washington's feet into a full-fledged face-off.
Israel is the most likely state in the world to take the United States to Armageddon. And I could paint you all sorts of ways we would do that and the ways we would get there.
The retired general also revealed that during 40 years of military service, He had heard constant advice from everyone not to establish an American military base in the Israeli-occupied territories. He stressed that the United States standing with Israel against half of the world is not a good thing. The Israeli regime, he said, needs to be reined, but that would not happen.
Israel, I think, needs to be reined in, and it needs to be told in no uncertain terms, you will change, and you will change swiftly and effectively, or you can count your sugar daddy gone.
Yeah,
not going to happen. Not going to happen.
In fact, Washington has played a key role in shielding Israel for decades through the supply of arms, financial support, and UN vetoes.
Well, I certainly think that that's a possibility. I do agree that it is delegitimizing itself, even in the eyes of many Jews around the world, especially young Jews, which is going to make it hard, of course, for Israel to reproduce itself. And yes, I think it's being considered more and more a worldwide pariah.
Wilkerson has said that the obsession of U.S. neoconservatives, particularly former Vice President Dick Cheney and former Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, is to plunge the entire Middle East region into chaos and to keep Israel's enemies at each other's throats so that they could not unite and give Israel trouble, militarily or otherwise. Wilkerson also pointed out that it does not matter for neoconservatives to target Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, or Iran in their pursuit to set the region on fire, as the important thing for them is to protect Israel. However, the axis of resistance in the region has so far managed to oppose Western, namely United States and Israel, interests in the region and foiled their plots. Members of the axis of resistance include Iran, Syria, and Lebanon's Hezbollah, and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad and Hamas, to name a few. The latest sign of this assertion is the U.S. House of Representatives' decision to pass a bill to provide $1 billion of additional funding to replenish Israel's so-called Iron Dome anti-missile system, despite the regime's blatant violation of Palestinian human rights.
The limelight. From Liverpool to Los Angeles, shortages of energy, labor, and transport are threatening recovery from COVID-19. We're prepared for you an article written by Martin Ferrer. The piece is titled A Perfect Storm: Supply Chain Crisis Could Blow World Economy Off Course. It was all going so well. Successful vaccination programs were driving the post-pandemic recovery of the global economy. Stock markets were back at record highs, and prices were rising just enough to make deflation fears a thing of the past. But a supply crunch that initially put a question mark over the availability of luxury cars or whether there would be enough PlayStations under Christmas trees is instead morphing into a full-blown crisis featuring a shortage of energy, shortage of labor and transport from Liverpool to Los Angeles, and from Qingdao to Queensland. All the problems are in one way or another tangled up with the surge of post-pandemic consumer demand, but taken together they threaten what one leading economist calls a stagflationary wind that could blow the global economy off course. Mohammed El Arian, the advisor to the insurance giant Allianz and president of Queen's College Cambridge, says recent surprise fall in factory output in China was a clear warning that the world economy could slump while prices were still rising quickly, a doomsday double whammy that almost sank the UK in the 1970s. He said, The supply chain problems are much more persistent than most policymakers expected, although companies are less surprised. He added, governments are having to rethink quickly because of three elements. Supply side, transport and labor are coming together to blow a stagflationary wind through the global economy. Energy shortages are providing the starkest illustration of the problem, with increasing numbers of petrol stations in the United Kingdom running out of fuel, and cities in northern China having to ration power and force factories in the world's number one manufacturing nation to shutter just when pre-Christmas demand is reaching a peak in the West. Both countries have been caught out by not having enough reserves amid a scramble throughout the world for natural gas and for oil, which has almost doubled in price in 12 months to nearly $80 a barrel. Along with ongoing COVID-related restrictions in some large manufacturing countries such as Vietnam, and a well-documented shortage of components such as computer chips, factories are simply not producing enough. British car production dropped by 27% year-on-year in August, as a lack of semiconductors and led to a big drop in the number of vehicles exported to Australia, the United States and China. On Thursday, Volkswagen, Ford and Opel maker Stellantis announced fresh temporary closures in Germany because of the chip problem. Opel is closing a plant until 2022, the longest such stoppage so far. In Japan, an index of stocks finished goods has dropped to levels not even seen in the wake of the 2011 earthquake and tsunami disaster. But even if they could get their hands on more sources of energy and materials, and factories could make more goods, it would still cost more to ship things. Drewry's shipping index, which measures the cost of containers, is up 291%. Compared with a year ago. On some busy routes, such as from China to Europe's biggest port of Rotterdam, the cost of shipping a container has risen sixfold in the past year. The problems don't end with the goods arrive at a port, with labor shortages presenting a final problem in the increasing tortuous journey of products to their final destination. A lack of truck drivers in many parts of Europe, partly because of disputes over conditions and partly because of ongoing COVID restrictions, is causing delays. Flavio Romero Macau, a supply chain expert at Edith Cowan University in Western Australia, says that massive pent-up consumer demand in the wake of the pandemic has strained the world's delicately balanced economic ecosystem. Flavio Romero Macau says consumers are crazy to buy things because the world is awash with dollars from government stimulus, higher savings and pent-up demand. PlayStations, laptops, phones, gym equipment, you name it, people are trying to buy it. Adding, higher demand and restrictions supply equals inflation. There's no way out of it. You put all these things together and it's a perfect storm. While warnings increase about the threat of stagflation, more economists believe central banks might have to move more quickly to raise interest rates if inflation takes hold across the developed world. The Bank of England has flagged that interest rates could go up next year, and the US Federal Reserve has at last signaled the end of its massive pandemic stimulus plan that could push up the cost of borrowing in 2022. Neil Shearing, the chief economist at Capital Economics, said Britain and the United States were most at risk from overheating into inflation, leading to central bank action. Neil Shearing said, risks are generally skewed to the upside, and there is a real possibility that inflation increases to a much higher rate that would in time necessitate a more substantial tightening of policy. A paradigm shift in monetary policy after years of cheap credit could be accompanied by a rebalancing of the global economy, as countries seek to shorten supply chains and become more self-sufficient through more autarkic policies, which promote non-reliance on imports. Romero Macau believes many companies could take the chance to move manufacturing away from China, where the supply of cheap labor that launched this economic miracle is drying up, to countries such as Vietnam and Mexico. He said the latter has cheaper labor costs than China, making it attractive especially for American companies. Richard Flax, the chief investment officer at digital wealth manager Moneyfarm, said the crisis was already prompting a rethink by policymakers and business leaders. He said large corporations and governments are reviewing their supply chains for crucial goods, with a mind towards security of supply as well as costs. We would expect to see supply chains in some sectors shorten as a response to COVID, either via reshoring or as companies try to diversify their sources of supply. Off the coast of Los Angeles, California, a record-breaking flotilla of container ships is waiting to unload goods. With the holiday season approaching, companies across the United States predicting shortages and price rises for everything from artificial Christmas trees and sports goods to Thanksgiving turkeys. Retailers warn that basics could once again be in short supply. Some experts predict 80% of the United States will be vaccinated against coronavirus by the end of the year, but the pandemic's impact will last far longer than that, as the broken links in the global supply chain continue to drag down the economy. Log jams of container ships are only one part of the story. The United States is also experiencing a massive labor shortage, especially in the leisure industry and entertainment sector. There were a record 10 million job openings in the United States at the end of June. Help wanted signs can be spotted in restaurant windows across the country. U.S. Republicans have blamed pandemic-related increases in unemployment benefits for a lack of workers. Those benefits have ended, but there is as yet little evidence the industries hardest hit are gaining enough workers. Low wages have led millions to reconsider their careers during the pandemic, a phenomenon known as the Great Resignation. At the same time, lack of affordable childcare and the continuing closure of some schools has led many people to drop out of the workforce. With coronavirus still a big threat in many of the countries the U.S. relies on for goods, the crisis looks set to continue for some time. The U.S. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell said recently, "It is frustrating to acknowledge that getting people vaccinated and getting Delta variant under control 18 months later still remains the most important economic policy that we have." Jerome Powell added, "It is also frustrating to see the bottlenecks and supply chain problems not getting better, in fact, at the margin, apparently getting a little bit worse." A sudden rise in gas bills caused by international shortage of supply will only push inflation higher still. Without extra support, many families could see their living standards fall.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Start.
Movement.
Speak.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
Islam ID.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, brothers, sisters, dear listeners, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, wherever you might be or whatever you might be doing. And welcome to Youth Station. I'm your host, Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi, and with me, my dear brother in faith, Habib.
Assalamu alaikum, brother, at your service. Thank you guys for having me.
How are you, bro, today? Show.
Alhamdulillah.
To eat, there's an advertisement. To wear clothes is an advertisement. To drink, there's an advertisement. To buy a car is an advertisement. To wear shorts and shirts and jeans and what have you, everything has advertisement. Now, I can see that you really hate that topic.
Yes, I hate it.
Okay. Now, let's talk about this. I've walked one day. I was in the haram of Al-Imam Ali alayhi salamullah, the commander of the faithful.
Okay.
And I was just standing at the door. I think I was coming out from the actual dharih, from the actual...
The door next to the dharih.
Yeah, from the grave of the imam himself.
Salawatullah.
A youth walks in.
Right.
And he was wearing the most obscene, most rude t-shirt I've seen in my life. He was wearing a white shirt with a man that seems to be from the hip-hop culture, with his, you know, hip-hop clothes. And he was walking into the haram of Amir al-Mu'mineen. Mm. Now, I was shocked. I said, in this modern day, everyone knows, I mean, I tried to excuse the kid. I said, maybe he doesn't know what this letter means.
It's very hard to excuse him anyway.
Maybe he didn't have shirts. But it's clearly, he was trying to be defiant, because I can tell from his hairstyle, from his... And walking in the haram of the imam, to what extent have we been brainwashed?
I just want to add something. I want to add something here. That the same person in that picture, the rapper himself or the hip-hop artist himself, would not wear such a shirt to a sacred and holy place.
He wouldn't wear it in front of his kids.
Yeah.
Yet alone a sacred place.
Yeah. So unfortunately, we've been brainwashed. We've been intruded by this kind of society, this kind of thought of, you know, wearing these kinds of, I don't know how to say it, this lifestyle, culture.
It's culture.
Yeah.
Okay, so first, let's understand. I mean, I want to see what you think, but advertisement, like, what are they trying to achieve themselves before we get to the specifics of things?
Look, 100% money, power. 100%.
Money and power.
Money and power. How? I make an advertisement. You know how much they put money towards advertisement? I think the money that they put towards advertisement is more than the money that they put towards their products.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, like this company, it's a small company. It wasn't that big. TeamViewer. It's just one program.
Yeah.
They're on the shirt of a football team called Manchester United.
Yeah.
And so it was a small company. I was shocked, actually, to see this big football team make this kind of agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And they understand that it has an influence.
Yeah.
It has an influence. You know, because, for example, when I first saw the company Standard Chartered, whatever the company's name is, on the Liverpool shirt, I was intrigued. I'm like, what kind of company is that? So I go and open and search about it.
Uh-huh.
So it opens the eyes. One company that I know, for example, Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
How does it advertise? It doesn't need to go to commercials or TV. It spreads culture.
Well, I mean, that's how things work anyway. So if they want to make money,
exactly,
that's how it works. But do you think it's as innocent as you make it sound, that it's just money? Could it have?
I believe.
I
don't want to call that their intentions are evil, because they view that their intentions are pure, for example. That we want to spread out democracy, for example. Right?
So, of course,
the opposite is correct as well. The companies themselves are affected by the culture.
Mm.
LGBT month.
Okay.
Everyone is gay now.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is a lesbian now. Everyone's a transgender now.
Okay.
All the commercials are about gay people.
All right.
Yeah.
So is that just innocent as I'm just
money.
Trying to
Why'd
support?
You do it? Money.
No, that's the thing. Is it as innocent as them trying just to make money, like they're just riding the wave? Or is it in fact they're trying to brainwash people?
Don't you see it as manipulating people? I see it as manipulating people.
Well, I mean, that's what I'm trying to get at. Is it manipulation or is it money making?
Both. Because how do you make more money? Manipulate people.
Now, so for example, coming with Santa Claus,
yeah,
and the bunny rabbit for Easter,
yeah,
that's a money making season.
Yeah. Right?
But with LGBT, for example,
having
trying
gay
to
people work with for your company.
But sometimes you might find the government themselves giving such even free ribbons and free shirts and free advertisement for
the
LGBT
cause, for
community.
Yeah.
But I mean, obviously they got a sinister plan behind it. They're trying to get people
to normalize it.
To normalize it, okay. If you they make him desensitized to the whole.
Inshallah, it's not normal. I hope it doesn't become normal at all. Well,
it's in the West, it has become normal.
That's unfortunate. I hope in our culture it doesn't become normal. I know that in Bahrain, Sunnis and Shias together, when they saw the flag, they started burning flags.
Mm.
We don't accept it. We have our culture. We have our Islamic culture, our background.
Yeah, and but I mean, that's not.
Actually, we had Daesh.
That's not all the Muslim countries. Most of the Muslim countries don't care now.
Unfortunately, that's really unfortunate. That's really unfortunate.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Every nation has something that it's connected to. Even in democracy nations.
So we can agree on the fact that advertisement could either be from the sake of money,
yeah,
or it could be for the sake of trying to push an agenda forward,
yeah,
and try to brainwash people. What would be your advice to the Muslims, or specifically to the Shia kids or youth, who when they want to choose a shirt or pants or jacket, and they go with this fancy advertisement on it. What is the message that we want to get across to them
always
from an Islamic perspective?
Always stay to your roots. You, as a human being.
Two rules, you said?
Stay to your roots.
Stay to your roots. Okay.
You, as a human being, have free will.
Mm-hmm.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is not disobeyed against His will. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala allowed you to disobey Him. But it's your free will. When you want to choose, know what you're choosing. Mm. Know your purpose of life. Really goes back to this, down to this. Knowing why.
But they don't. That's a problem. When we give them too much free choice, they will make the wrong choice.
What I want to say is that understand your choices.
Mm.
Understand that you're picking this. Of course, what I've seen from the youth who've grown out of this, you know, agenda, they said that they regret every day that they wore these kinds of clothes, or they had these kinds of, you know, they fell into these kinds of, you know, ideas. Knowledge, so important. Ra'su kulli khair. It's the head of every good.
So education, basically.
And when you choose from an educated point of view. Don't just pick like this because, oh, I feel like it looks cool. No. Mm. There are things that look good, they might feel good at the beginning, but they're not correct to do.
Well, they will affect your personality and how people will view you, right?
Exactly.
I mean, if I see something on a shirt,
yeah,
that is awful, and especially in some countries that don't speak English.
Yeah, you don't know what you're wearing. You don't understand what you're wearing.
So should we tell the youth that first and foremost, even if it looks appealing and nice, at least Google it, see what it means.
Search for it. Our internet is available. See what it stands for. See why is it trending?
They're advertising an industry that's based on corruption. Yeah, without realizing. We need to begin at least with trying to educate the youth as much as we can into this. Why are they allowing advertisement of?
Because the people themselves are corrupt. People start to talk about the government, start to hate the government, start to do this and that and against the government. Why? Because they feel like the desires are being limited.
Mm.
They're not doing what they want to do. They're taking away my free rights. They're taking away my rights. It's like they're taking away water from them, and they're taking away food from them. You see them wearing the hijab in some Arab countries, but when they're outside the government, before and after the government, they take off their hijab, normal. And at the end of the day, people who are corrupt, it's a disease. They don't keep it to themselves. They spread it, whether they like it or not.
Mm.
They spread it. Why? Because the people themselves don't want it.
they wanted to make an advertisement for, I don't know, bottle of shampoo. Why would they bring a half-naked woman as an advertisement for it? It's a state
That's wrong.
A state owned. They could say, well,
that's
we're only going to put it.
They're wrong.
Or they bring even let's say that maybe that was a better example.
They're wrong.
A good example. They bring just normal, I don't know, cooking product, child's nappies,
the Rock.
A shoe. They bring the most good looking woman
the
doing
Rock.
This ad.
The Rock. That's it. That's the end of the story.
This is wrong.
The Rock. You know, unfortunately, people view this as a terrorist idea. If I ruled, half of you would be dead.
Okay. Thank God you're not the leader. Otherwise, we'd be in a mission. Thank God we don't have Habib as a leader. Okay. Now, let's go back to something that I grew up with advertisement. We grew up in the culture of conspiracy theories.
Unfortunately.
Right. Now, they do tell us that when you watch movies, there's a beginning and end and a middle, right?
Yeah.
And there's constantly hidden messages and they're trying
the eye and the triangle.
Yeah, the triangle or the
yeah.
eye or the...
Do you believe in that?
A lot of the youth are brainwashed by it. Do you believe that the concept that messages in the movies and into the advertisement itself
There is a culture that's being taught,
mm-hmm.
right? And every producer, I think it's very important to before you watch a movie to know the producer, mm-hmm. to know the writer, and to understand his thoughts. And you see that his thoughts are being portrayed in the movie.
Okay.
You see a religious Christian person making a movie. You see that inside the movie there are a lot of Christian teachings.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's an action movie about cars,
yeah,
you see a lot of Christian teachings, Christian ideologies, Christian methods.
So they're advertising their own beliefs.
Exactly. It's the
in
view,
an entertainment
and
way.
That's the thing with art. Because art, you portray what you see as
is
reality.
Is it art itself or those who abuse
it? It's art. You want to call it abuse? I don't see it as abuse. That's art. You have to be smart enough to understand that the person who
so you're saying advertising your thoughts in an action movie itself is a form of art.
It's a form of art.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Deceptional art.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You agree or disagree?
Well, I that would be an insult to the artist, though. So these guys are trickery. They're magicians of some sort. But I wouldn't call them artists. Because I will be doing injustice to the artists.
No, look. Because I don't believe in art. That's one thing.
Is there anything that you believe in? Is there anything that you believe in?
Allah.
Why don't you go to a cave and live in a cave and do us all a favor?
No problem. I'll go into a cave. I wish I could go live in a cave. Stay away from these kinds of thoughts. I really wish I can. You think I don't wish that? I could not see people at all. Because, you know, just my thoughts, I don't know. Maybe too extreme for you guys. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, brother, you're too open-minded, you guys. Kind of close it off.
Okay, being open-minded and close-minded, it's an option. But we always say that the message of the show is that when it comes to advertisement, please pay attention. Learn what you are wearing, what you are listening to, what you are reading, because it could, in fact, be playing a trick on your mind without realizing it. Thank you for listening, and inshallah, we hope to see you in another program of Youth Station. Stay safe. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I am what I am because you made. I have what I have. My love is strong because you are the one I call creator. My Alpha and Omega, my protector and my maker. Because of you, in weakness I am braver, my defender and my savior, my giver and my taker. Abiding in silence with patience.
in the limelight.
The treachery associated with what has become known as normalization is an outrageous manifestation of betrayal and collaboration. Limited to the UAE, Bahrain, Sudan, and Morocco, these regimes have in effect confessed that the protection of their shaky thrones counts for more than legitimate rights of the Palestinians. Dear listeners, what you heard was part of an article written by Iqbal Jassat, journalist. This article is published under the heading Normalization, Betrayal of Palestine by Arab Regimes, No Easy Road. Stay tuned for more. Pinning Palestinians down while applying harsh measures of violent repression accompanied by a fanatical settler movement of a racist given free rein to attack and plunder is a notorious game the Zionist regime has elevated to a daily ritual. In fact, the routine of inflicting war crimes has all the hallmarks of a rogue regime entirely caught up in a misplaced belief that to engage in ethnic cleansing is a religious obligation. Conflating Judaism with a racist political ideology of Zionism has been part of a strategy designed to deceive, distort, and divert. It has its roots in the first Zionist Congress held on the eve of 19th century. That this is well documented and widely known is not in dispute. Indeed, awareness of Zionism's goal to dismember and dislodge Palestinians from their centuries-old homeland and forcibly impose thereon a foreign entity known as Israeli regime has always been a bedrock for resistance. The fake regime of Israel has thus always been considered an enemy thrust upon a native population through the most horrific forms of terrorism. The memoirs of Deir Yassin remind the world of bloody massacres committed by Zionist terrorists who didn't spare hundreds of villages to colonize Palestine. That more than seven decades later, the expansionist goals of Zionism are still being pursued at a great human cost to successive generations of the indigenous Palestinian population is reflected in daily atrocities. None of these facts, as attested to by historians as well as organs of the United Nations, are contested. Although the Israeli regime and its supporters seek to distort and malign commentators who speak truth to power as anti-Semitic, yet against this background of terrorism and current conditions, siege, occupation, killings, and mass imprisonment, recorded and broadcast via mainstream media for all the world to witness, it is bizarre that a handful of Arab regimes have broken rank with Palestine's freedom struggle. At a time when Haaretz describes atrocities by the Israeli regime as a program, quote, residents of the Palestinian communities in the southeastern West Bank have experienced with settler attacks when they graze their flocks, work their fields, or even have a picnic on their own land, but they cannot recall an attack like the one experienced Tuesday by the small communities of Khirbat al-Mufkara, al-Arakis, and Tawani. On Simhat Torah, dozens of young Jews, most of them masked, conducted what can only be described as a program, unquote. The treachery associated with what has become known as normalization is an outrageous manifestation of betrayal and collaboration. Limited to the UAE, Bahrain, Sudan, and Morocco, these regimes have in effect confessed that the protection of their shaky thrones counts for more than legitimate rights of the Palestinians. As unelected self-imposed despots fearful of domestic values, they have bargained that normalization with the usurper of Palestine will guarantee safety and protection for them. In other words, just as Egypt has done, these oligarchs have outsourced their intelligence networks and security apparatus to the Israeli regime, knowing full well that in doing so, they have abandoned Palestine. Though the abnormality of implicit recognition of an illegal colonial enterprise has been in sharp contrast to countless Arab League resolutions, the deal of normalization pushed by Trump and vigorously backed by the Biden administration has exposed these leaders as surrogates of Western imperialism. The case of Bahrain's role in the Abraham Accords reveals the soft underbelly of Arab dictatorships. Besides being financially dependent on its neighbors, especially the UAE and Saudi Arabia, Bahrain's alliance with the Israeli regime is designed to entrench its power and crush any resistance to authoritarianism or efforts towards freedom and democracy. In 2011, during the onset of the Arab Spring Uprising, Saudi Arabia sent troops to Bahrain to suppress anti-government protests. This trend continues today by the Israeli regime, equally committed to maintaining the status quo and preventing the success of any popular uprisings. In this context, one may justifiably condemn Bahrain's gross insensitivity and abject abdication of Palestine's freedom struggle as treacherous. Showcasing Israeli regime's war criminal, Lapid's visit to Maname, where he is set to open the embassy flying the Israeli regime's flag, is utterly outrageous. This follows the opening of a Zionist embassy in Abu Dhabi. Another embassy will likely be established in Rabat. Sudan thus far has reportedly said that it has no plans yet to open an embassy in Khartoum. Not surprising, therefore, the Arab street across these capitals have vowed to end normalization. The iron-fisted grip held by Arab despots notwithstanding, human rights movements, many banned and leaders exiled, have declared their outright rejection of America's much-vaunted Abraham Accords. Stirrings in Sudan are becoming more vocal despite Khartoum's attempts to silence critics. In Bahrain, the main opposition group, Al-Wefaq National Islamic Society, declared Lapid's trip as a threat, saying this is provocative news and this trip is completely rejected and Lapid should not set foot on Bahraini soil. Their message is clear. Any Israeli presence on Bahraini soil means incitement.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Fatima al-Zahra's lofty position, the 3rd of February, 2021. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, all praise is due to Allah, the Lord of the worlds, and peace and greetings be upon our Master Muhammad and upon his pure household, especially the one remaining with Allah on earth. Allah send as many greetings to Fatima, her father, her husband, and her children as your knowledge encompasses. I wish to congratulate all you dear ones who are present at this meeting, in particular the dear brothers who sang for us, as I really enjoyed their performance. I only regret that it was short, and I wish we could have benefited from your performance too, 3 times more than this. On the birth anniversary of Siddiqat al-Tahira, greetings be upon her, on the birth anniversary of our magnanimous Imam, and on the 10-day Fajr ceremony. I have written down a few points, but I will not be able to discuss them all because of a lack of time. I will raise a few points about Siddiqat al-Tahira, greetings be upon her, then I will discuss an issue about Women's and Mother's Day. This day has been aptly named as Women's Day and Mother's Day. And I will say a few things about the fortunately increasing phenomenon of panegyrics in the country. Regarding Hazrat Zahra, peace be upon her, even if we adopt an ordinary worldly outlook, perceptive, mystic and spiritual eyes might see other things, of course. We see that the great personality was the Holy Prophet's cherished daughter. The Holy Prophet would kiss her hands and would stand up in front of her. Before every trip, the last place he would visit was Zahra's house, and he would depart on his trip from that place. And whenever he returned, the first place that he would visit was Zahra's house. She was such a daughter. As well as this, she enjoyed the position of infallibility. This is an astonishing and extraordinary position. Moreover, she was on par with Ali ibn Abi Talib. This is while Ali ibn Abi Talib is so great that after the Holy Prophet's time, the world has not seen anyone like him. Fatima al-Zahra, peace and greetings be upon her, was the wife of such a personality, and she is on the same level as he is.
Allah
Of Jalali Tehran.
Rubashavik Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
On Friday, in the Italian capital, over 3,000 Alitalia workers staged a new protest against the government's decision to shut down Italy's flag carrier since 1947. Alitalia is to be replaced by a slimmed-down state-owned airline called ITA, Italia Trasporto Aereo, that is planned to take over many of its assets. For years, Alitalia workers have held protests trying to block the morphing operation, which base unions say will result in the loss of thousands of jobs.
8,000 jobs will be slashed under the deal. Furthermore, we estimate that three external workers for each sacked Alitalia employee will find themselves unemployed. This is social butchery. Our country should be ashamed. The plan is to take a competitor like Alitalia out to make things easier for Air France, British Airways and Lufthansa.
In practical terms, the government is wiping the national collective agreement off. Workers in the aviation industry will no longer have any protection. They will become on-call employees. It's a shame that our largest left-leaning party and the largest unions have opted to team up with neoliberal forces.
Last month, the EU competition regulators surprisingly approved the morphing of debt-stricken Alitalia into a smaller company, conceding that the new state-owned airline was not liable for repaying 900 million euros in illegal state aid received by its forerunner.
The demand is that we need Alitalia. Italy needs a flag company. That's why we are here. And ITA is not that.
The new ITA airline will operate with less than half of Alitalia's fleet of aircraft. Pilot and aircrew pay is set to be almost halved. ITA is reportedly set to introduce a new labor contract aimed at giving it greater flexibility and competitiveness.
The 74-year-old Italian flag carrier Alitalia is set to fly for the last time on October 15. On the same day, its new incarnation airline, ITA, will start operating with 2,800 employees. More than two-thirds of Alitalia's staff, however, will be laid off. Max Civili, Rome.
Iran's Army Ground Forces on Friday launched a military exercise in the northwestern region close to the borders with Azerbaijan and Armenia. Artillery, drone, and electronic warfare units with aerial support from the Army's Airborne Division are participating in the exercise. The drill is codenamed Conquerors of Khaybar, a reference to the 7th century Battle of Khaybar, in which Prophet Muhammad and his army of early Muslims foiled a plot hatched by Jewish tribes. Iran's Army Ground Forces commander, Brigade